Welcome to the Mental Minute, an AI-generated podcast. Today, we're taking a deep dive into an absolutely fundamental topic, human nutrition. We've been provided with a comprehensive Wikipedia article, and our mission is, wow, to extract the most important insights for you, our curious listener. We want to cut through the noise, deliver some surprising facts, maybe some actionable knowledge, what really fuels our bodies, and you know, how does that change across our lives?
Exactly. And human nutrition, at its heart, it's about getting those essential building blocks for life, for good health. It's a topic that touches everyone, often in ways we don't even realize. And the source material really highlights this. Poor nutrition is still a huge global problem. It's tied up with poverty, yes, but also, critically, just a lack of understanding. It's not just what we eat, but really understanding why it matters.
Okay, let's dig into that. Our source jumps right in with seven major classes of nutrients. For our listeners who might already know the basics, what's maybe the deeper distinction we should focus on here? Any unexpected twists in those categories?
Well, what's really interesting is looking beyond just, you know, listing macronutrients and micronutrients. Sure, carbs, fats, proteins, they give us energy. That's the standard definition. But the real nuance comes with water and fiber. They're also macronutrients, technically. But, and this is key, they provide no direct energy. Yeah, and that distinction, it often gets missed, but it really highlights their crucial non-caloric roles. And then, of course, you've got your micronutrients, the minerals, the vitamins, needed in smaller amounts, but just as vital.
Hold on, that's actually a really critical point. Water and fiber macronutrients, but no energy.
Yeah.
So if they aren't fuel, what are these non-caloric powerhouses actually doing for us?
Yeah.
And has our thinking on their impact changed?
Yeah, that's where it gets really insightful. Take fiber. It's not fully absorbed, right?
Mm.
But it's absolutely crucial for gut health. It slows down how fast we absorb sugar.
Yeah.
And really importantly, it feeds our gut microbiome, our gut bacteria.
Right, the microbiome.
Exactly. And they then produce beneficial things like short-chain fatty acids. Butyrate is a big one. That's actually fuel for your colon cells, and it might play a role in metabolic health overall. Our source even mentions the FDA approving a health claim, a qualified one, for resistant starch, which is a type of fiber, linking it to potentially reducing type 2 diabetes risk and water. Well, it's way beyond that old 8 glasses a day thing.
Mm-hmm.
The European Food Safety Authority, they actually recommend specific total daily intakes. That includes water from food, from other drinks. It's a whole diet picture.
So a much more holistic view of hydration than maybe people think. And fiber is literally feeding our internal ecosystem. Okay. That brings us to carbs. Another macronutrient that's, well, often misunderstood. Our source says they're not technically essential. That probably challenges what a lot of people believe, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It can be surprising. Because while carbs are a major energy source, the body can actually make glucose. It can make it from protein or fat if needed through a process called gluconeogenesis. So yeah, technically not essential. But the real takeaway on carbs isn't about cutting them out completely. It's about refinement.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, choosing fiber-rich, slowly digested carbs over the really processed stuff. That old simple versus complex idea. It's actually too simple. Modern food processing has massively shifted things. We eat way fewer resistant starches, the less digestible kind, and way more rapidly digestible ones.
Okay.
And that has a huge impact on blood sugar. Think about it. Traditional diets might have had 30, 40 grams of resistant starch daily. Now in the U.S., it's often under 5 grams. And the WHO recommendation, limit added sugars to less than 10% of your energy. That points right at this issue.
So definitely less about no carbs and more about which carbs.
Yeah.
Quality over just quantity. And speaking of things that get a bad rap, fats.
Yeah.
What's the critical thing to understand about them?
Right. Fats. Well, they are essential, especially certain types, the omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. They're literally everywhere. Cell membranes, immune responses, they're building blocks for really important compounds in the body. But the game changer in understanding fats, it's the ratio.
The ratio.
The balance between omega-3s and omega-6s are modern industrialized diets. They're often way skewed towards omega-6, mainly from processed vegetable oils. And that imbalance can affect inflammation, cell health, all sorts of things. So the focus should be on rebalancing that ratio, not just slashing all fat.
Okay, rebalancing.
And then you have trans fats. These are pretty rare in nature, mostly created industrially, you know, through partial hydrogenation. And the evidence is clear. They're really detrimental to health. Unequivocally bad.
Got it. Okay, so we hit the energy macros. But what about protein, vitamins, minerals? People often seem to struggle with optimizing those. Our source talks about their roles, but are there common myths or key distinctions listeners should know beyond just the basics?
Good question. With proteins, they're made of amino acids, right? About 10 of those are essential, meaning we have to get them from food. But here's a critical insight, maybe busting a myth. A well-planned vegan or vegetarian diet, it can absolutely provide enough high-quality protein. You just need to be mindful.
That's important to clarify.
Definitely. Then vitamins, also essential. Vitamin D is kind of the odd one out, as we can make it with sunlight. But here's the crucial balance. It's not just deficiency that's bad. Getting too much of certain vitamins can also be harmful. That's why there are tolerable upper intake levels, ULs. It's definitely not always a more is better situation.
Right. That's a really good point.
And minerals, things like calcium for bones, iron for blood, they're inorganic elements, vital roles, some needed in larger amounts, macrominerals, some tiny amounts, trace minerals. The article mentions iodized salt. That's like a classic public health success story, right? Preventing goiters just by adding iodine to salt shows how targeted mineral intake can have a huge impact.
So a diverse diet isn't just about covering all the bases, but getting the balance right for all these different intricate parts. That's a powerful takeaway.
Yeah.
Now let's shift gears a bit. Our nutritional needs, they aren't set in stone. They change dramatically throughout life. What are some of the most critical times, especially for listeners thinking about family, maybe, or their own aging process?
Yeah, that's a really important question. How do our needs shift? The source really spotlights maternal nutrition. During pregnancy, obviously, but also that crucial first 1,000 days.
The first 1,000 days.
Yeah, from conception right through to the child's second birthday. It's foundational. Specific fats, protein, folate, zinc, iodine, iron, copper, they're all absolutely essential for the baby's brain development during that window. And then for infants and kids generally, rapid growth means they just need a lot more energy and nutrients relative to their size. It really sets the stage for their whole life's health.
It's clear those early years are so critical. What about less obvious insights for pediatric nutrition? Any common pitfalls parents might miss?
Well, the article offers some really valuable stuff beyond just listing nutrients. It talks about feeding challenges in young kids, things like neophobia, that's a natural fear of new foods, or even genetic differences in tasting bitter flavors. These are often just normal developmental stages.
So not necessarily a picky eater label right away.
Exactly. The key concept mentioned is responsive feeding. It's about the caregiver tuning into the child's hunger and fullness cues. Not pressuring or bribing, it means patiently offering new foods again and again. Sometimes it takes 10, even 15 tries before a child accepts something.
Wow, 10 to 15 times.
Yeah, and many parents, understandably, might give up much sooner. But that can unintentionally reinforce a limited diet. Patience and persistence are key.
That really reframes how we think about kids' eating habits. Okay, now let's talk about aging. This is where it gets really interesting for many of us. The article points out this kind of paradox. Our energy needs might go down as we get older, but certain nutrient needs actually go up. What does that mean for staying vital?
Absolutely vital point. For older adults, yeah, energy needs often decrease, but protein needs, they actually increase. And so do the needs for specific micronutrients just to support normal body functions. Take protein, for example. To fight off sarcopenia, that's loss of muscle mass with age, older adults need more protein. And crucially, it needs to be spread out more evenly through the day.
Evenly distributed.
Yeah, aiming for maybe 25, 30 grams of high quality protein at each meal seems to be more effective than having most of it at dinner, for example. Then think about zinc deficiency. It can seriously weaken the immune system in older adults. Hmm. And B vitamins B12, B6, folate, they're directly linked to cognitive function. Deficiencies can contribute to cognitive decline, even depressive symptoms. It's often related to high homocysteine levels, which isn't good for the heart or brain. Bone density is another big one, especially for women after menopause. So getting enough calcium and vitamin D3 remains critical. And iron deficiency, also really common in the elderly, leads to anemia, fatigue, just lower quality of life. And the real challenge is many of these deficiencies, they can creep up slowly. They often go unnoticed until bigger problems start showing up.
Wow. It really drives home how nutrition needs to be tailored, how it evolves. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all deal across our lifespan. Okay, moving beyond individual needs now. Our source paints a pretty stark picture of global nutrition challenges. When we talk about malnutrition, what does that really cover?
Yeah.
What are the biggest issues globally we should know about?
Right. Malnutrition is a much broader term than just, you know, not having enough food. It's a whole spectrum. It includes undernutrition things like wasting, which is low weight for height, stunting, low height for age, and just being underweight. But it also includes micronutrient issues, deficiencies, or excesses of vitamins and minerals. And really significantly today, it includes overweight, obesity, and all those diet-related chronic diseases, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, some cancers.
So it's under and overnutrition existing side by side.
Exactly. And the source is clear. These problems are deeply tangled up with poverty and disease. It creates this vicious cycle that affects billions of people.
It is striking how widespread some specific deficiencies still are. Can you give us a sense of the scale of these silent hungers, as the article puts it?
The scale is genuinely staggering. Iron deficiency affects about 2 billion people globally. 2 billion, it leads to anemia, impacts kids' cognitive development, and is a major factor in mothers dying during childbirth.
2 billion.
Wow. Then vitamin A deficiency, aptly called silent hunger. It affects around 190 million preschoolers, 19 million mothers worldwide, causes blindness, weakens the immune system severely. And iodine deficiency affects a massive 1.88 billion people, impacts brain development, nervous system function, can lead to lower IQ, poor school performance. And even though we have things like salt iodization campaigns, which have been successful, these problems persist. It shows how deep these global health challenges run.
These are clearly huge, complex issues.
Yeah.
But how did we even get to our current understanding of nutrition? The source traces a pretty fascinating history.
Oh, it's a great journey. The science of nutrition, I mean. You start with ancient observations, like Babylonians advising against onions for pain way back, like 2500 BC, then Hippocrates around 400 BC with his famous "let food be your medicine" line.
Right.
But then a real scientific leap in the 18th century, James Lind. He did what's basically considered the first clinical trial. He figured out lime juice cured scurvy in sailors. That was a full 180 years before vitamin C was even identified. Amazing.
That is amazing.
Then Lavoisier, in the 1770s, he connected burning food, oxidation to body heat, laid the groundwork for understanding metabolism. And then fast forward to the early 20th century, Casimir Funk coins the word vitamin, finally giving a name to these vital but still kind of mysterious compounds.
And where does food processing fit into this story? That's such a huge part of our modern food system.
Yeah.
Was it always a mixed bag?
Definitely a mixed bag. Food processing, especially kicking off with the Industrial Revolution, had this profound sort of dual impact. On one hand, things like pasteurization were huge public health wins, saved countless lives by making food safer, preventing bacterial diseases.
Okay, so safety improved.
Right. But on the other hand, many processing techniques like milling grains or heating foods extensively, they inadvertently stripped out vital nutrients. The source gives some stark examples. Beriberi, that thiamine deficiency disease. It popped up when people started eating a lot of polished white rice because the milling removed the thiamine.
Oh.
And scurvy even appeared in babies in the late 19th century because they were being fed heat-treated milk and the heat destroyed the vitamin C. So that led to fortification adding nutrients back in, which helps, of course. But the takeaway really is that highly processed foods often still end up with a less favorable nutritional profile compared to whole foods. More sugar, more easily digested starch, maybe oxidized fats, trans fats, and less of the good stuff like vitamins, minerals, and fiber.
So what does this all mean for us today? Trying to navigate all the dietary advice, understand our food, there's so much information out there, often contradictory.
It really means we need to cultivate a kind of sophisticated approach. Nutrition literacy, as the article calls it. Governments provide guidelines, you know, like MyPlate in the U.S. or Canada's Food Guide. Professional groups offer evidence-based advice. But the source points out that nutrition literacy itself is a real hurdle. Many adults actually struggle to process and understand basic health information. So this raises a really important question for you, the listener. How can you empower yourself? How do you cut through all that noise and make genuinely better choices about what you eat? Choices that ensure you get the nutrients you need, not just now, but throughout your whole life. When you look at that journey from ancient guesswork to modern science, you see our understanding is always evolving. Being informed, being critical, that's really your best tool for navigating optimal health.
That was a truly insightful journey through the world of human nutrition. From, you know, the very basic building blocks right up to global challenges and that fascinating history of how we even figured this stuff out.
It really highlights just how critical and, yeah, how complex our relationship with food actually is and the huge impact it has individually and, well, collectively too.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in.